We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the DFS pregame show here on Roto Grinders. I'm Jordan Cooper, aka Blender Ed, Blender HD. You're gonna follow me on Twitter. And it's Friday, March 31st, the last day of March. And we just got yesterday was the opening day, Major League Baseball. Did you have a good first baseball slate, 11 game slate, main slate yesterday? Was it good for you? Was it good for me? I made about $3,000. I was pretty good. Between DraftKings, between Prize Picks, between Underdog, it was a pretty good day for me. But we'll talk about that what happened yesterday and everything. Not a big slate today, right? I think 5 games, kind of weird, right? Oh, all the games yesterday, nothing today, nothing, right? 5 games, whatever. If you got any questions, obviously post them in the YouTube chat. Hit that thumbs up button, smash. And bang and tap and do whatever you want on the like button, the subscribe button, the notification bell. Good morning to Wataz, Suki Singh, the early birds, Doug Montgomery, D-Fick, Rod, real life pitcher, Bart B, Daniel Hutchins, 10% day. Okay, 10%. 10% profit. Hey, any day of profit is a good day, right? Yesterday, I played 5 lineups yesterday. I've described my strategy this season. Not going to be playing really the large field. I'll throw my lineups in the large field. Anyway, I'm playing 2, quote, cash lineups. And those are essentially triple up and quintuple up lineups. So I'm playing a lot of 3-mans, 5-mans, triple ups, quintuple ups. And I'm basically trying to play lineups that are probably 4 or 5 points lower projected than optimal, with as much differentiation between my lineup and the lineups that I'm competing against in the 3-mans and the 5-mans. And a lot of times these lineups share a lot of players, right? In my opponent's lineups. So I'm just trying to get triple or 3 to 5x my buddy with just like a 6v6, a 7v7, as much as I can when players are just like highly, highly owned and correlated to each other. That's what I do with 2 lineups, right? To reduce the variance, right? Because once you drop typically 4 or 5 points of projection, a lot of those lineups, you could play 100 different lineups that kind of look like that. So I choose 2 of them, and 2 of them that probably aren't even that correlated to each other. And both of them actually cashed in the triple ups and some quintuple ups. Then I played 3 GPP lineups. The main one in the 121 single entry on DraftKings, which I came in 14th. Right, I had the Orioles. I had the Orioles 5-man stack. I typically play just 5-3 lineups. It just makes it easier. So I'm not playing chalky one-offs or anything like that. So basically combining 2 teams together, the Orioles and the Royals, And the Royals didn't do much, right? Franmil Reyes struck out a bunch of times. So that didn't work. That didn't work out for me, but still 14th place. Ain't bad for $500. Right, McClanahan, Cole, Rushman, obviously one of the top scorers on the slates. Santander, Urias, Henderson, Mullins with Bobby Witt at shortstop. And Isbell and Reyes, who are both like barely owned, right? So there, with the two chalky pitchers. I mean, like McClanahan and Cole were the combination that was the most chalk. You could see this lineup in the large field $15 one. You could see here how the ownership condenses. And that's kind of the theme of today, but to go over. When you're playing smaller field, single entry, the ownership condenses, and it condenses on the outsides, okay? Doesn't condense that much in the middle. You can see here, even with the Baltimore stack, like the ownership of the Baltimore stack between the 121 and the $15 large field wasn't that dramatic, right? Here's small field, 15% for Rushman, 10% in the large field. Santander, 12% in the small field. Actually, was more, a little bit more owned in the 121, 7%. Henderson, 11%. Urias, 4%. Mullins, 10%. Right? Henderson, 15%. Urias, 4%. Mullins, 14%. Right? Not that great of a difference. But on the outskirts, look at the McClanahan, 50% in the small field, 36% in the large field. Cole, 38% in the small field, 32% in the large field. But you'll see at the upper ends and the lower ends, the highest owned stuff is going to be way higher. And the lowest owned stuff is going to be like, instead of being 3% owned, it'll be like 1% owned. In the 120, in a contest like the 121 single entry, which has what? 459 entries, right? Compared to, you know, obviously this one has 39,000 entries. And we could see that. I'm going to switch over to my other screen because I downloaded the CSVs of both of these and they show the ownership. So you could download. Let's see. Let's go to the entire screen over here. So you could download these CSVs. I mean, you could download these lineups, right? You could import them. You could do whatever you want with them. So we see here on this first screen right here, this is the 121. Okay. Over here, I'll scroll over just so they kind of match up a little, right? This is the large field. So we take a look at the large field ownership. It's like Austin. Let's take a look at the Braves. Austin Riley, 33. Albies, 29. Acuna, 26. Sean Murphy, 21. Matt Olson, 18. Now let's take a look at the 121. Austin Riley was 56% owned. 56 for Riley, 47 for Albies, 40 for Acuna, 40 for Sean Murphy, 29 for Matt Olson. Look how much, I mean, like more than a third, I mean, look, triple, more than 40% of lineups, 40 plus percent of lineups in the 121 on an 11 game slate consisted of at least a three-man Braves stack. At least. If not four or five. In the large field, that it wasn't the case. If let's say you averaged them out, which is not like the perfect way to do it, but if we averaged out the 121, so we got what? Austin Riley, 56, plus Albies, just like the main five guys, right? Albies, 47, Acuna, 40, Sean Murphy, 40, and Olson, 29. That's 212 divided by 5, 42.4. Okay, now let's go to the large field. Riley, 33. Albies, 29. Cunha, 26. John Murphy, 21. Olson, 18. That's 127 divided by 5. 42.4. In the small field, in the 121, 25.4 in the large field. Okay? An 11-game slate. It's not like the Braves had like a million point run total. It was 4.8, and it's not like it's that dramatic. Were they the best projected team? Yes, they were. They were the best raw projected team on the slate. Minnesota, there's another team that would, for value sakes, was also projected well, right? So we see in the large field, if we take a look at Byron Buxton, 18, Kepler, 15, Nick Gordon, 14, Correa, 14, Larnach, 13, right? The top four guys, top five guys. We look in the large field for the Twins, the small field for the Twins, Buxton is 28 versus 18 in the large field. Larnach is 26 versus 13 in the large field. Kepler's 23 versus 15 in the large field. Gordon's 20 versus 14 in the large field. Correa's 18 versus 14 in the large field. So in the 121, between the Braves and the Twins, that like has stacks of at least three, right? Even like a little mini stack, right? Like that represents like 60% of the lineups. Right? 50, 60. I mean, obviously people are making Braves Twins types of lineups. Then once you add that with McClanahan and Cole, McClanahan, 50% in the 121, 36% in the large field. Cole, 38% in the 121. 32% in the large field. You see here in this 121 contest, you know how many lineups have like overlap with one another? I would guess a third of the lineups have like five or six very similar players. Right? It's McClanahan, Cole, and some form of Minnesota, the Twins, and Braves. Right? Lineups that have Buxton have Larnach, maybe have Murphy as catcher. Right? Have McClanahan and Cole. Like that, combinatorically, there's so many more lineups that share all the points, like five or six guys together. Well, in the large field, not so much. I mean, yes, that's the most likely looking lineups, but it only represents 15, 20% of the field rather than 40% of the field in the 121. But once you get outside of like the chalkiest situations, like everything that the Orioles were about the same, right? We saw, let's see, what else? With the Pirates, about the same, right? I mean, kind of everything is like in the middle is fine. But then when you go down to the bottom, it's like okay, in the large field, you'll get a lot more of these like 2%. Lars Nootbaar, 2%, right? 1% in the 121, which is like, is what? 459 lineups. What's 1% of that? That's four or five lineups total. Right, we get down to, you know, some of these guys down here that in the large field, 39, if you have 2% of 39,000 lineups, we're talking about almost 800 lineups. In the 121, we're talking about four, eight, even less than that. Right, when Logan Webb goes for 25.9 points, in this large field, he was 1.75% owned, which for like a 40,000 entry contest is like what? About 700 lineups? In the 121, he was what? 0.44% owned. That's what? Two lineups? It's two lineups. That's it. Only two lineups he's in. He scores 25 points and no one has him. Right. Look, Marcus Stroman, 0.22% owned. That's literally, I think that's literally one lineup. Right? Can anyone? Yeah, that's literally one lineup. The only way to be 0.22 would be one lineup. Right? CJ Crone put up 42 points in the 121. 0.22%. One lineup. That's it. Was he in the large field GPP? Large field GPP did not. I don't think he had. No, Crone wasn't in the winning lineup. I mean, take a look at just the dynamics of when we talk about it as far as building the nut lineup. The winner of the 121, their score was 196. 196 doesn't even get in the top. It doesn't even show on this page, right? I would have to scroll down. 196 even would be a tie for 56th place in the large field for who knows, with barely anything, whatever it pays. You don't need the nut lineup. You don't need to try to get, I mean, you're probably not finding the nut lineup. You're not all one-offs or whatever. But, like, you don't need as high of a score in the 121 because you're only competing with 459 entries. rather than 39,000 entries. Which means you don't have to be perfect. You don't need CJ Cron and Marcus Stroman and Logan Webb. You don't need that. Large field, it would help a little bit more because you have more lineups to compete against. But you combine that dynamic with the propensity of the field to heavily condense on ownership in a sport, especially at hitter, that has so much variance and bimodal nature of projection. Like I built my lineup, my Orioles stack. I built my lineup based on just Xing out the Twins and the Braves. Right? I ran 100 lineups without Acuna, without Buxton, without Albies. Right? I looked at the chalkiest batters without Riley, Albie, Acuna, Murphy, Buxton, Kepler. You know, I left out, I just like, I'm going to X all those guys out, and then I'm just going to run 100 lineups. And compared to the ownership of those lineups, eliminate the ones in between. You could do that with the portfolio trimmer at theoryofdfs.com. You could do it manually in Lineup HQ also if you're dealing with a small amount of lineups. It doesn't take that long. What lineup came up? That was a 5-3. And this was the lineup. Right? It's like, oh, Orioles. After I get rid of those two, once I get rid of those players, now obviously I can play an RC line. I mean, there are other Braves, there are other Twins. But once you get rid of the most owned players at batter, I'm like, okay, here's this Orioles stack. And I saw, compared to the Braves or the Twins stack, projected like 6 points lower. Using McClanahan and Cole, using the two chalkiest pitchers, the two highest projected pitchers also. So I'm like, the ownership is like half as much. Like in the large field, you don't get as much leverage because people aren't condensing on the chalk as much. Now in the large field, you're much more likely to take shots on lineups that are 30 points lower projected. In the 121, you don't need to do that. If I'm within 10 points or whatever, I'm fine. Especially with the correlative nature of MLB. So Baltimore was up. And I knew because Baltimore was in the middling ownership. They weren't unowned. It's not like these numbers aren't like, oh, he played a 1% stack. No, the Orioles were like the third most popular team on the slate. Yeah, I think they had third from a stack perspective. And then like maybe the Pirates and then the Reds, maybe. Blue Jays a little. Yeah, then it's everything in the middle ends up being the same between like, close enough between the small field and the large field. Now, the stuff at the very bottom, right? I don't know who played like down here playing, you know, the Tigers and the Rangers and the Phillies. Like the Phillies were barely owned, right? Schwarber, Realmuto. Like in the 121, it's like less than 1%. But in the large field, you'll see 2%. You'll see some of this stuff, right? You'll see. I mean, I'm taking a look. Like Goldschmidt, Arenado, 2%. Whereas Goldschmidt's 1% in the 121. It's that nature of like all the ownership that is condensing up the top isn't really coming out of the middle. It's just coming out of the bottom, the lowest projected players. So in large field, where you're more likely to, you know, take a shot on a 2% owned Cardinals stack, like that stack in the 121 is going to be less than 1% owned. And you don't need to play it because if it's so low projected, you only have to beat 459 entries. So most of the time in the 121, I'm playing one of the stacks in the middle. You know, if you rank the stacks from 1 to 22, I'm playing somewhere, so the teams that are somewhere between like 3 and 7. Like stuff like that. 4 and 7, like it obviously depends. Depends on how the salaries work out. And then pitcher wise, I in the 121 pitcher is more normally distributed outcomes. So I'm typically going to play, you know, two of the higher projected pitchers. I could have played Snell in this line. I mean, like, basically it was playing Cole McClanahan and Snell. Like, two of those three. Now, there are going to be times where sometimes the higher-owned teams aren't owned enough. I mean, that may not happen in the 121. In the large field, it may happen. And that's when you may get more different at pitcher. But I'm much more willing to trust, you know, median projections when it comes to pitcher than when it comes to batters, because they don't hit medians. They're bimodal nature of their projection. So that's why I wanted to show this. Like, that's why I say that the 121 single entry is the softest GPP on DraftKings. It's the softest one. Now, it's $121 to enter. But why is that? Why is it soft? Why am I explaining this nature? It's going back to the episode. Where does the money come from? Go back to that episode. Go back to the one about GPP equity dynamics. Or equity distribution, whatever. I did a couple of months ago. Where does the money come from? The money comes from bad lineups. Negative EV lineups. What are negative EV lineups? What are the two main characteristics of negative EV lineups? Lineups that are either too high owned or too low projected. One of the two. Okay? So when you play large field GPPs, a lot of times, a lot of your equity comes from the low projected lineups. People that are playing, I mean, baseball, it's hard. It's a little bit harder to do. But obviously, remember, correlation boosts the projection, in a way, of your lineup. I saw a tweet yesterday. Someone, the sports underscore projections tweeted out. He looked at the main GPP. 31-32% of all entries in the large field GPP did not contain a stack. Did not contain a stack of players. Just people playing twosies and onesies and 30%, a third of the lineups. You know how much projection, in theory, you're giving up by not correlating in MLB? Especially on a larger slate? A ton. An absolute ton. Now, in the 121, that's probably not the case. Probably 121, you're not going to get many of those style of bad lineups. You'll get some cat people throw in their cash lineup and throw, you know, the 8-1 off cash type of lineups. And then, yeah, sure, thank you. Thank you for ceding your equity to me. Thank you. You see, I'm not ceding min cash equity, but you're ceding, like, win equity to me. Or to the good lineups. But the thing that you see way often in the 121 compared to the large field is that a lot of people are playing are just way too high owned. I mean, like, way. Imagine playing McClanahan Cole. Imagine playing McClanahan Cole. Maybe I could go to yesterday's slate. There was a way to make a 5-3 like Braves Twins lineup with McClanahan Cole, where you were playing Buxton and Acuna. Right, because the pricing was pretty soft. Like, you play, like, Larnick in the outfield, and you can play Albies and Murphy. Like, there was a way to put it all together. I'm pretty sure if I go through these lineups, I'm going to find a lot of those. Right, Gallo or Miranda at first base instead of Olsen. Right, you fit it all together. These lineups, in the large field, they're high-owned, but nowhere near as high-owned as the 121. You're playing a 50% pitcher with a 38% pitcher with a 56%, 47%, 40%, 40%, you know, stack with another 28 plus 20. Like, the lowest, the player in your lineup with the lowest ownership is like 15%, if that. It's the lowest player, And you have 1, 2, 3, 4, you have 5 players over 40% owned. Or over 30, it's 6 players over 38% owned. How the hell do you expect to win that? Right? You're sharing points with so many people. You need everyone, all the chalk, to everyone to explode and just so happen to have the right, like, 1v1. And the 1v1 you have, you may actually be duping someone else. right? It gets to the point sometimes where the combinatorics of all these players make it so that, like, dude, you win the 121 and you're duped four times in a 459 entry contest on an 11 game MLB slate. There's no reason you should be duping. With how many lineups are possible? There are trillions of lineups possible, right? And you're going to dupe with multiple people? But that's why this is so exploitable. Because there's no way that the Braves should be a 40%, 42% owned stack in an 11-game slate when they have a run total under five. It's not like they're somewhere where their total is 8.5 and the next highest total is 4. Maybe 40% should. Maybe they should be 40% then. Maybe. I say maybe because I don't even know if that's you even do it then. There wasn't that dramatic of a difference between the Braves, Twins, and like other teams on the slate. The Orioles, the Red Sox. They had four totals. 3.8 total. It was a low total slate to begin with. But you take advantage of all this condensed ownership, meaning that so many more out of the 459 lineups, like half of the lineups are negative EV lineups versus the large field where you may only find 30%, 30 to 40%. Here you may find 50%. I mean, like, just so many more bad lineups. And what did we talk about the other day on Wednesday? You can make so many, you can make tens of thousands of plus EV lineups. You can, right? Your goal is to not make the bad lineups. Just don't make the bad lineups, and you're probably going to be doing very well over the course of, in the long run, a season, two, three seasons. Because you're aiming for first place. That's not going to happen every day. No, of course not. But what happens if the Braves go out and put up 14 runs? It's like, okay, then you don't win that day. You come in last place. And then even if you chose the Braves, it's like, oh, I have Braves. I have Twins, I have McClanahan and Cole, and I came in 26th place and tied with five people. I mean, like the upside on there is also horrible. How are you differentiating from other people? You're sharing so many. Yes, you have a lot of points, but so does everyone else. The game of DFS is not about scoring the most points. It's what I talk about in Theory of Daily Fantasy Sports, the masterclass at theoryofdfs.com. So the first chapter, the fundamental theorem of DFS. DFS is not about scoring the most points. DFS is about scoring more points than your opponents. So it is a relative value, not an absolute value. So why the hell am I playing for? Why am I playing a 56% on third baseman? Is he the highest projected third baseman? Yes, but I mean, from a median standpoint, but there's five others within a point of him. Median-wise, but they don't hit their medians. It's bimodal. So why am I playing that with a 47% on second? Half the lineups of the contest have Riley plus Albies plus McClanahan. So why are you playing that combination? Doesn't mean you can't play. You have to fade all of these guys. No, it doesn't mean that. But why are you playing like, oh, Austin Riley did well. It's like, well, did Albies do well? No, then you're dead. Right? Right? All those lineups are dead. Sean Murphy got a zero at catcher. He was 40% owned in the 121. You know how much leverage you get by having some other catcher? If you had Travis d'Arnaud instead, you were fine. Right, if you played Alejandro Kirk, you got seven more points than 40% of the lineups. Yeah, sure, you probably needed Adley Rutschman, right? But dude, getting a zero at 40%, like, you're ceding so much equity by playing similar combinations of players, especially when there's so few entries in the contest. It's 459 entries. So this is why I say that in smaller field, single entry contest, I am more contrarian. Large field contests, I mean, I'm contrarian also, building lineups that fit around each other, but the ownership doesn't condense as much. I could play, yeah, you could play a Braves stack, play a Braves stack in the large field GPP, but you need to get really different. You're not playing McClanahan. You're not playing Buxton as a one-off. You can get different enough. And then the Braves go nuts. You have multiple pieces in your lineup that aren't being shared by other Brave stacks as much, right? You have Marcus Stroman in your lineup, and you had whoever. You had CJ Crow, and you had Rockies. Like, dude, that's all you need. The five-man Brave stack would be fine. But all those other players in your lineup are really dragging your projection down, which means I need a bigger payday in order for that to be worth it, right? Which you could get in the large field, but you necessarily can get in the 121, 5K to first. It's a flatter payout structure. So I'm less likely to go completely off the board in the 121, but I'm more likely to be more contrarian. Meaning I'm more likely to take a look at my lineup. My lineup, I mean, essentially, I faded the Twins, I faded the Braves. Look how much ownership is on all those players. It's like, there, and then build whatever I want. At that point, I could build whatever I want. That's contrarian, because half the lineups have Braves and Twins in them. Doesn't seem that contrarian. Well, I'm playing, what made you play Kyle Isbell? It's like he's 2,300, and he fit in the lineup. Because obviously, if I'm not playing Correa, right? I didn't play Gunnar Henderson at the shortstop position. It's like, well, I needed a shortstop. We take a look. Like O'Neill Cruz. Maybe I could have played Cruz, Sawinski. I could play Pirates in this lineup. And I saw when I ran lineups that I got Orioles Pirates lineups also. I did play Pirates in another. One of my three lineups, I had a Pirates stack. Or Pirates three-man. I think it was a Blue Jays five-man, Pirates three-man. I mean, I'd probably go back and probably see the three lineups that I played. Like, let me stop the screen. Let me go back to here. Because I have this up. Right? Because I played three lineups. Right? The other two lineups I played in, like, the $25 single entry, the $12 single entry, the $5 knuckleball, the $4.20 max, and then I throw all three lineups into the $15 large field. So you can see here. So like the other lineup I played was, this is exactly what I, right. Snell Cole, then the Toronto five-man, then Cruz, Reynolds, and CSN. That's what I'm calling them. Okay, Cannon, Smith, and Jigba, whatever his name is, right? So I played this lineup. And then the other lineup was, this is the lineup I did play the Twins, but with the Reds. And then when I played the Twins, I had Michael Taylor in here. So McClanahan, Cole, then the Stevenson, Myers, India, Steer, Friedel, right? No Vosler, who's a little bit more popular. And then Buxton, Correa, Taylor. And when I say I, it doesn't mean I can put in these people. Like, what made you choose this guy? I didn't choose any of the players. I just ran lineups. That's it. I ran 100 lineups. By Xing out all those high-owned Braves and Twins and stuff like that, right? But I also ran a 100 set that I just Xed out the Braves and I just Xed out the Twins to see lineups. I didn't want to play five-man stacks of them. So, three-man stacks. Let me take a look at what these lineups look like. Then out of all those lineups, 300 lineups, I condensed them all down, got rid of the ones that were too high-owned. I was left with probably 20 or so lineups. And I'm like, okay, I need to choose three. The top one was that Orioles. The top one that I had in that set was this lineup. So I played it in the 121. And once I saw this, it's like, okay, out of three lineups, maybe I got rid of all the other Orioles stacks. Out of the 23 lineups, I got rid of the 8 other Orioles stacks that were in there. And I was like, okay. I want to have the Blue Jays. So I found the Blue Jays lineup, and I'm like, okay, this lineup looks pretty good, and they're done. Right? And then I go here, and it's like, okay. I know the Braves are going to be the highest owned, but I don't mind the Twins, so out of the lineups that are left, are there any Buxton lineups left? I'll play Buxton in a three-man stack, and then I found this lineup, and there you go, three lineups done. Easy. Took me no more than 10 minutes. That's it. My two cash-ish lineups, right? That didn't have Acuna, didn't have Buxton, right? Didn't have Sean Murphy. I played Rutschman in one of them, so that did very well. But both of them actually cashed in triple up. So it was a good day for me. And then on Prize Picks and underdog, I lost a little money. But Prize Picks, I did well. Prize Picks, I made, what, $1,500 or so, I think. Pretty good yesterday, right? Hunter Green under 7.5. Oh, that would have been so much of a better day. So much of a better day if Hunter Green had one less strikeout. That's it, right? So I had Pablo Lopez over strikeouts. I had Snell over strikeouts, Otani over strikeouts. What else was yesterday? I had DeGrom under strikeouts. I had DeGrom and Scherzer under fantasy points. I mean, I think I only got two. I think there was only two that were bad, three that were bad.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I can go back on Price Picks and see. Yeah, I didn't get to get Gallen under 5.5 strikeouts. That didn't work out. That was a bad one. That was one that didn't go anywhere. But you know how I do Price Picks is just the bat projections. I mean, it ain't hard. When people ask, like, can you do a video about Price Picks and underdog? It's like, I go to the statistical projections of the bat, right? Right, here we go. And then I go to Prize Picks, right? Oh, we got the pitcher fantasy scores up now, right? So I just go here, right? I go pitcher fantasy score, right? Lizardo, 28.5. 29.34 is the, because it's FanDuel scoring. So that's not enough. 1 point is not enough. And Prize Picks. Christian Javier, 33. Projection, 33.19. So that's there's nothing to add there. Dustin May, 30.5. It's almost as if they're looking at this. Merrill Kelly, 23.5. Merrill Kelly, 18.82. Right? So maybe this is an under. Maybe. Robbie Ray, 31. Robbie Ray, 29. Yeah, that's not a big enough discrepancy. There, that's it. This is it. This is exactly what I do, right? I think I already got like, where's the Lynn one? Oh, they got rid of it. Lizardo's up now. This was at 5 earlier today, right? So look, if you go here, Lizardo strikeouts, 5.74. It was at 5. I got it at 5. I got this at 5. It's now they bumped it up to 5.5. So you're done. You got to get them early, right? There's no value in this anymore. All right, with Christian Javier, 6 strikeouts. According to this, we have 6.72. So that's still a bit. If you want to take the Christian Javier more, there's a little EV there. It's not great. I wouldn't be putting, you know, whatever, a higher number of volume. It's like, yeah, you probably, this is probably slightly profitable, right? Do they still have it up? No, they took this down. They had Nick Martinez. I got Nick Martinez over 1.5 earned runs It's no longer even up on Prize Picks. But if you look at the standard the bat projections, his earned runs, 2.79. Right? So his line really should be 2 or 2.5. They posted it at 1.5. So I combined it with a bunch of other stuff. And now it's gone. Now it's gone. You got to get him early. You got to get him early. Hits allowed. I think Peterson over today, right? We take a look at the bat projections. Peterson hits 5.10. So over 4 should be plus EV on Prize Picks. This is it. What am I supposed to do? You get the bat projections. You can get them on Roto-Grinders. Go buy them. It's like, what, $300 for the entire year or something? I mean, like, it's stupidly low cost. You're going to be using it for your DFS play, right? You're using it for your DFS lineups. You're playing almost every day. How much is it? I mean, it's like $1 a day or something. I mean, it's stupid cheap. Right? And you go this, and you wait for the lines to come out, and there you go. And you start, and you go to Underdog, right? You sit here at Underdog, right? Go. I don't have to look at anything. I don't have to care. I don't even have to know who these people are. Here's a table. Go to the site and compare it. You need to hear. See, Lizardo, they still have it 5 strikeouts on Underdog, not 5.5. So higher. There's one. Right? Lynn, they have down at 5.5. I got Lynn at 6. So 5.5 is no good anymore. Javier's still up at 6, although that's okay. I think Nick Martinez over 1.5 walks allowed, maybe a slightly plus EV because the bat has walks at 2. Right? So this is it. I mean, what process do I have to show? Like, all I'm doing is looking at a table of numbers and comparing these numbers to the numbers that are up here. Then if it's off by enough, and hitting them. Right. If we take a look at the ones that I have in law, do I have? Yeah. Pick. Right. So look, this is what I do. I typically put like 2 together. Right. 30, 40. Yeah. So Martinez here. Martinez higher, 1.5 walks allowed. Javier higher, 6 strikeouts. Done. Here's Lynn and Martinez. Right. Here's Lizardo and Martinez higher. Right. Higher than 5. Nick Martinez walks allowed. Right. Lynn Lizardo. See, I got Lynn at 6 strikeouts, lower than 6, which is much better than 5.5, because I push at least on 6 now, right? So that's what I do there. That's Underdog. And like, if I go to my entries on, this was my free flex play, right? They give it today. There was a promotion. Typically, I don't play, you know, four pick flex, but this is like free. But look, Nick Martinez, more than like Javier, here's for $20 here. Right, I go all the way down. I just round robin. Javier, more than 6 strikeouts. Peterson, more than 4 hits allowed. Lizardo, more than 5 strikeouts. Javier, more than 6. Right, Lizardo, Peterson. Here's Lynn Lizardo. I don't think they have the less than 6 up on Prize Picks. I don't even have Lynn up. They'll probably put it back up at 5.5. Right, and I just round robin these. Right, $40 here, $40, $60. Right, because this 1.5 earned runs allowed. I mean, that was way off. So it's just like, okay, I'm gonna go up here. So here's $60 for those, right? $60 for this one, $60 for that one, $60 for this one. The walks allowed, I'm not even sure if it's plus EV. I typically don't place cards on walks allowed. I don't know how the distributions work as much for walks allowed, but when he's projected for 2. And Lynn is projected for 1.36, and they're the same line. So Lynn, more or less than 1.5, is the same as Nick Martinez, more or less than 1.5. So I'm just going to have to assume that over 1.5 is going to be like 50, at least a 57% win rate, maybe. I just don't know how the distribution of walks allowed works as much as the other stats. So that's why it's like $20 on these, right? So I round robin them. So like, I don't need all of them. I mean, dude, I have 1, 2, 3, I have 6. If 4 out of the 6, right? 4 out of the 6, like win, like I profit. 5 is a good profit. 6 is great. If 3 out of 6 come through, I have a small loss. Right, so I'm not doing these 6-pick flexes where I need to get like, oh, well, you get 25 times the money. It's like, well, I'm looking to take advantage of the bad numbers, so I want to reduce my variance. From an EV standpoint, you could do either thing. It's just a matter of, I don't mind sacrificing a slightly bit of EV to reduce my variance so heavily so that my swings aren't that wide. But this is it. I mean, what other thing do you need for prop betting? Get statistical projections. Either you're making them yourself, but I don't know how to make projections. Then get the best model in all of fantasy baseball, which is Derek Hardy's the bat. And there you have it. It updates every 5 minutes. So lineups change and weather changes. Things may go slightly up or down. And then hit the numbers as early as you can before they move, right? You go back to Lynn, like Lynn strikeouts isn't even up. I don't think, now it's back up, 5.5. See, there you go. I got it at under 6. So when he throws 6 strikeouts and you have the under, you lose and I push. Doesn't sound like that big of a deal, but you add that up over, you know, if you're doing, you know, 6 to 10 or whatever every day. And on average, like half a time a day, you get a push versus a loss or a win versus a push. Over the course of an entire season, that's where like so much of your profit comes from. I got the better number, so I have a 12% ROI over the course of the season, and you end up with a 2% ROI. Right? Oh, it's still profitable, but I mean, you've gotten rid of all that profit of all the times that you lost instead of won because you didn't get the best number. Anything in the YouTube chat before we get out of here? Mike Ostry said, wow, first day of MLB and already won the 4-seamer. Oh, well, congratulations, Mike Ostry. Thanks, Blender, for the preseason videos. You're welcome. Daniel Hutchings says that his algo randomly went chalky in the battery in the 121. Where's the 121? Where's the nerdy tenor? Let's do a. I mean, I don't have it on the screen, but let me check. Where's the find? Find nerdy tenor. What a nerdy tenor. Oh, ugh, dude. How the fuck do you play this? Dude, like, that's like the epitome. Daniel, what are you doing? Like, this is the epitome of the lineup that I wasn't going to play. Now I see why. I see why. So, Nerdy Tenor in the 121 played Matt Olson, Alzi Albies, Austin Riley, Sean Murphy, Ronald Acuna. Right? So, essentially, the 5 most popular Braves, and then also played Byron Buxton, Max Kepler, and Nick Gordon. The 3 most owned. Well, that Larnick was the owned, actually owned more, but I mean, whatever. The 3 most owned Twins. A 5-3 Braves Twins lineup. The thing is, he played Nola and Snell. So basically, he played the chalkiest batch you could possibly think of. And then said, nope, I'm going to fade McClanahan and Cole. Which I guess is fine. I mean, according to your system, maybe it has a similar EV. But, dude, do I want to share that many points at bat? Like, just from a macro standpoint. You have to admit, from a macro standpoint, why do you want to hold hands so much at the most varying positions, at the most bimodal nature of projection? And then like, okay, I need all the, I need the 2 chalk stacks to do very well. Then the pitchers to fail. Just seems like completely backwards. But Nerdy Tenor, he just goes by his computer system. His computer may not know. Or maybe it's similar EV, just that it realizes the EV in much different ways. But yeah, it's definitely not a lineup it's literally the 8 batters together that I would have avoided. Like, if you told me What eight batters not to play together? At the top of the list would be those eight batters. Like, literally at the top of the list. Mark Mabaluk says, how crazy do we have to get in a DK 20 max? Is it enough to fade chalk just one place, whether one of the pitchers or primary stack to take it down? Sure. You should go back to Wednesday show. You could build for yesterday 70,000 plus EV line. I mean, like, you're overthinking it. When in doubt, you're overthinking it. For MLB DFS, whatever you're thinking about, even everyone that's watching the show now that's heard me say that multiple times, if you're out there and listening and you can hear my voice, you are overcomplicating MLB DFS by at least five times. By at least. Of the people that are currently watching and have watched 100 of my shows, you're still making it too complex. I built my lineups yesterday, and it took me 10 minutes only because I was organizing. Well, it was my first day of going through for my two triple up lineups. But my GPP lineups, the three lineups that I played in GPP, and the 121 lineup that I played with the Orioles, I could have made in, if I did it fast enough, maybe 20 seconds. Maybe. Right? It's more of the fact of lineup HQ has to generate like 100 lineups each time. So I'm sitting there waiting. If it wasn't for that waiting period, yeah, it would be like 20 seconds. Right? I trim all the lineups, and then that was the top one. That was it. That's the one. That's my 121 lineup. Now it's a matter of choosing the other two lineups, and I could have chose any one of the 300 lineups that I had in there. I could have. Just a matter of like, okay, well, if I'm already playing the Orioles in this lineup, from a diversification standpoint, it's like, okay, I'm already committing $121 to the Orioles, so I'm not going to play Orioles in the other two lineups. So I got rid of the Orioles lineup. So it's just a matter of which do I choose. You can play lineups that are projected, if you're stacking, 20 points lower than other lineups in baseball. When in doubt, from a macro standpoint, batters, hot chalky batters are typically over-owned, and chalky pitchers sometimes are actually under-owned. You'd be much more likely to play higher median projected pitchers than care about the median projection of batters. Jenna Sandy asks, I remember someone saying if you're going to play against the highest owned pitchers, you have to do it every slate. Jordan, is that true? No. I don't even understand. Why would you have to do that every slate? You don't have to. Grant Brown asks, common props to target. Everything. The hitter props are ones that I don't bother with. On Prize Picks and Underdog. Hitter props on regular sports books, like, go for it. Have fun. But you can't go by median, like, it's, you can't go by median projection when it comes to hitter stat, unless something is really off. Because remember, there are not many outcomes around the median when it comes to hitters. So it's like, oh, they have a fantasy point projection of 9.5. And this is over under 6.5. I'll hit the over. Like, yeah, but a lot of that median projection of 9.5 is when they hit a home run and score 16 points in one shot. So it's like, for them to get over 6.5, it's like they're going to probably need that thing to happen anyway. So having the prop be 6.5 or 8 probably doesn't matter that much from a distributional standpoint. So that's why the hitter props are much less likely. You'll find 57.5% win percentage ones that you'll need on Underdog or Prize Picks. I think you're more likely to find them on under. If you want to dive deep, because I did this last year. I did hitter ones, but the EV on those are, even if you find them, are much smaller. But you're much more likely to find the bad lines on Underdog What you'll find is that underdog, they'll post something like they'll post something like one and some fantasy, like 5.5 fantasy points or something. And then you'll see that like the projection is like 9+10, almost 10. And then you'll hit it. And then in the morning you'll wake up and it won't be 5.5. It'll be like 1.5 total bases. It's like, okay, 1.5 total bases now. Yeah. They changed it. It's like, okay. Cause they went too low on that one. So underdog, maybe you'll be able to find it, but just to be clear, you're going to have to sort through like 99% of garbage to find hitter props on Prize Picks and underdog that are worth playing in these kind of like forced parlay, right? You need minus 137s because you can't just outright bet stuff. You can't find a prop on a DK Sportsbook that's minus 112 or minus 107, right? And go, oh, well, I'm gonna do that because, you know, this is profitable at minus 107, but not at minus 137. So that's what makes Prize Picks and underdog difficult. That there are plus EV cards, squares available, but 99% of them aren't. Mike Ostry says, thanks, Blender. My favorite advice was just don't build bad lineups. Seriously, though, very important when dealing with MLB variants for long-term success. Yes. And Daniel Hutchings, Dirty Tanner, says, I put in $30,000 of volume. I can't check them all. Which I agree with. I've done that plenty of times. I played 50, 100 lineups in large field, 150 sometimes. Some people look and it's like, I looked at a couple of your lineups. Don't you think these are a little too chalky? Or I looked at a couple of your lineups and boy, you played all these 1% owned guys and your projection is way too low. Like, why'd you play those lineups? And a lot of times I was building a lot of lineups and sometimes that's the cost of doing business. That can't check them all, right? It's like, or sometimes you're rushed. Sometimes it's 7:02 and I'm on my last run and I'm cutting this down. It's like, okay, whatever's here, whatever's in the top 60 slots on the CSV out of eight. I'm at 87 and I don't have time. So I just need 60. So I'll just take the top 60 and who knows? And some minus EV lineups could show up in them. But most of them will be good. Most of them will be fine. Mike Ostry also says the swollen base props might be solid while things adjust. Yes. I mean, that's normal sports betting, which just got passed here in Kentucky yesterday. And the governor this morning has signed it into law. So I will be able to sports bet in the state of Kentucky shortly. Probably not till the end of the year, probably. Maybe not even until next year. I don't know. They have to set everything up. I mean, it's just a law at this point. So they have to. It's going to be in person with the racetrack. Like it's all horse. This whole state is all controlled by the horse racing, Churchill Downs and stuff. So they still got to set. It's not like, oh well, I could walk into Churchill Downs and place a bet. It's like no, there's no sports book in there yet, right? They're going to partner with DraftKings, FanDuel, and everyone, you know. So who knows? It may not be till next year. And Munachi suggested to Jenna Sandy, go watch the Leverage show from a few days ago. You don't necessarily gain much from stacking against the highest owned pitcher when there are 22 teams on the slate. Right. You're looking for the highest owned. You're looking for the highest scoring stack regardless. Even though the highest owned pitcher could fail, does the stack score 10 runs? You don't know. Mr. Shadow Dog 13 says, I've learned so much here last couple of weeks. Thanks. Yes. Go back to the past 2 weeks. If you want an MLB DFS primer, go back to last Monday and watch the shows from last Monday to now. And there you go. There's the blueprint of here's how you could be profitable in the long run playing MLB DFS. And a lot of it is just don't build bad lineups and don't overthink everything. Get projections, stack teams, right? GPP wise. Don't build high owned lineups and don't build too low projected lineups. And you're good. And then enjoy yourself. Hopefully you realize your EV this year. Hopefully you bink once, you get a couple of top fives, and you probably, there you go. That's it. Welcome to MLB DFS. That's what it is. So hit that thumbs up button on your way out the door. Give me the thummy thumbs. Hit the like button. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the notification bell. Obviously, no MMA today. No MMA slate tomorrow. Right, next Friday, we'll back to the MMA streets on Fighting Fridays. But if you have any questions, right, I cover them on the show, right? I mean, any, you send in a question and I answer it, right? So email them in. Questions@theoryofdfs.com. That's what all the shows throughout the week are based around. Your questions. So submit them in. If you want more structured learning, right, you can go to theoryofdfs.com. Right, get the Fundamentals Masterclass. You get the advanced course with my custom Excel tools. You could pick those up, and you could listen at your leisure. It's a total of 21 hours of audio. So go to theoryofdfs.com for that. But I'll be back. I'll be back next week, and this is what I do. I talk about DFS strategy. I answer your questions Monday through Friday, 11 o'clock Eastern, on the DFS pregame show. On RotoGrinders.com.